an attack feels, but at the moment my body felt aflame. The pain was so hellish that I understood very clearly that I would not be able to bear the next level of acceleration. I gathered the last, and desperately escaping, vestiges of my consciousness and concentrated on Shyam. It was all or nothing. There was no other option. And still, I refused to hand Shyam over to Kornick. 7 seconds was all I had left of acceleration level 4, after which my flame would be spent and I'd revert back to being a pumpkin, a large and immobile heap.
Brother!
The wild cry of the head of the council, mixed with notes of hysteria and anguish, cut through the roar of my flame. 5 seconds.
Please help me, brother!
3.
Save me!
2. A red portal appeared next to Shyam, and the former head of the shaman council escaped the training grounds with a hop. 1. That was it. My acceleration had run out, and I was left utterly useless, even as a dragon. All I could do was maybe bash someone with my tail, if there was someone, that is. It was all too bad. Shyam only had 10% of his hit points left when he escaped, and yet, had he tarried, I would not have been able to finish him off. I'm too weak of a dragon, even for this quest.
You have won the duel. Your reputation with the spirits of the higher and lower worlds has increased by 1,000. Current level, friendly. Points remaining until respectful, 1,390. Endurance increased by 1. Total, 139. The Dragon's Breath spell has been locked.
All I could manage after the last level of acceleration was to open my eyes and look around. Like an ugly scar, an enormous, scorched area where Shyam had stood blemished the green training grounds of the shamans. A crowd of players had gathered around the spot, joined by shaman mentors, Almas, Kalatea, Kornick. The gathering was looking at me as if trying to make up their minds whether I was alive or not, so I gathered my strength and managed a smile. I don't know whether dragons can even smile, or what such an animation would look like, but I figured that this was the right gesture. It turned out to be a bad idea, too. My eyes filmed over, making the world go dark, and I nodded off into a gentle and pleasant darkness, which finally, and at last, silenced the horrible marching band in my head.
"Maybe he is dead?"
Through the patina of non-being, I heard a voice that brought me back to consciousness.
"You won't see the day," I growled, trying to open my eyes and get to my, well, paws.
It seems that I was still in dragon form, which means that less than 20 minutes had passed since my combat with Shyam.
"Get up, or you'll get frostbite on your tail!"
Draco's familiar voice forced me to make one last attempt and open my eyes. Renox, Draco, and several other dragons were staring at me like some freak of nature. Although, no, Draco was looking at me as he usually did, but the others...
"How did you manage to open a portal to here?"
my adopted father asked when I finally managed to regain my legs. This was the first time I had found myself in this world while in dragon form. I could hardly feel the deep cold.
"What are you asking him for?"
came the reply from somewhere nearby. I looked over and smiled. Kornick, in the flesh, and with Calatea beside him, too.
This feathered miracle just activated acceleration level 4, while only a rank 5 dragon, and somehow managed not to give up the ghost in the process, he said.
Glancing at Calatea, he smiled and added,
"Weren't you asking why he was my favorite pupil? He keeps pulling such fancy tricks that my eyes can't believe what they see. There's never a dull moment with him."
"Fourth?"
Renox asked with surprise. He looked at Cornick, at me, and then back at the goblin.
"How did he manage to survive?"
"That's what I'm saying. What are you asking him for? You should maybe teach him something, too. Or next time he'll activate acceleration level 5, and that will be it. Our precocious salamander will be toast. He will shut himself within and never become a dragon again. Is that what you want?"
"He is still too young for rank 5,
Renox muttered.
"Are you sure it was acceleration level 4?
"Well, think about it. How could he find his way here without a portal? The only answer is that he was on the very edge of exhaustion. Anyway, enough pulling the dragon by his tail. Increase his rank already."
Cornick fell silent, then smiled and added,
"He earned it."
Dragon rank promoted. Current rank 6. Your character has acquired a new ability. Waking flight, not dreaming flight. Movement speed in dragon form increased by 200%.
Dragon rank 6. Well, well. I'm squealing from joy, and my eyes, they overflow from happiness. I wish they would all go through the acceleration levels, too, and then try and say that I'm too young and inexperienced. And yet I truly am happy that I have received the speed boost. Now I can really race Plinto and figure out who is faster, me or his phoenix.
"So this is the legendary Dragonland?" asked Calatea, looking around the mountains. "A bit chilly here."
"You are mistaken, O daughter of Astrum,"
Renox replied.
"Dragonland is the place where your country's dragons went to. We stay in touch with them, but their lairs are unfamiliar to us. They are much too small and hot. The dragons of Malabar prefer cold and expanse. Our wings must always be spread out. I welcome you to the lands of Viltrax."
"Very nice," muttered Cornick like a jealous husband. "It's time for us to head out. The head of the council wishes to give Wonder Boy here a reward."
He nodded in my direction and added,
"Too bad I have no idea where he is."
"What do you mean you have no idea?" Astonishment made me forget the pain in my body. You were appointed head of the council, remember? You can give me my prize right here and now. I don't feel like going anywhere.
I am acting head.
Cornick raised a finger expressively.
Which duties I have already performed. Get up. There's no use lolling about here. You'll find out everything on your own in a second.
So who is the new head? I asked with surprise. I transformed back into my human form and cast a dome of protection on myself to keep the cold out.
What do you think? That we don't have enough harbingers? These days, Malabar's crawling with them.
Cornick smiled and touched my shoulder, and as he did so, the mountains of Viltorax vanished.
Here you are, came Cornick's satisfied voice, while my sight adjusted to the twilight. You can get the process underway while I have a chat with my sweet colleague from Astrum.
I looked around and shuddered. Again, this stupid deja vu. I am standing in sand, with walls of stone all around me, and judges hanging 2 meters overhead. This time, however, there was no emperor with his army of advisers. On the other hand, the entire shaman council was here, headed by... I could not believe it.
High Shaman Mayan.
The new head's baritone thundered through the hall.
The Shaman Council has confirmed the veracity of your accusations. From now on, we declare Shyam our mortal foe. We have identified the traitor. As a result of this incident, great changes await the shamans. We need to grow and become competitive with the other classes, thereby regaining our earlier might. As the new head, this shall become my main task. As for now, the time has come to reward you. As head of the Shaman Council, I grant you this helm. With the staff of Almas, it will complete your set of armor. From now on, you will look like a true High Shaman.
Acquired item. Shamanic helm of unparalleled inspiration. Durability, unbreakable. Description, plus player level times 5 to intellect, plus player level times 2 to endurance, plus player level times 3 to protection from all damage types. Item class, scaling. Level restrictions, none. Reputation with spirits of higher and lower worlds increased by 1,000 points. Current level, friendly. Points until respectful, 390. Reputation with the Shaman Council has increased by 1,000 points. Current level, friendly. Points remaining until respectful, 1,735.
Wow! My reputation with the Supreme Spirits had increased twice. Once during my battle with Shyam, and now. It was slow going, of course, and yet gradually I was approaching the rank of Harbinger. By the way, Cornick had mentioned that the new head was a Harbinger. Had they really promoted him?
Now that you are armored as a true High Shaman,
Prontho went on,
the time has come to give you your true reward. Hear me, Council!
Shouted Prontho, and looked around the gathered shamans.
Is this sentient worthy of our blessing?
Ha!
Cornick looked away from the orcas and stood up from his seat.
Prontho is rushing things, as usual. Like a naked orc after an elven maiden. And yet he is right. A month ago I all but rejected my pupil, having decided that he had betrayed us. However, at the last moment I felt that I had made a mistake. I had spent too long in captivity, and my reason overwhelmed my feelings. So I decided to ignore the matter and leave the rejection of my pupil to the court. I was wrong, and Mayen saw his journey to its very end, showing everyone how a true shaman must act. He is worthy of our blessing. One harbinger has made the proposal, and another has supported it. Does anyone care for the opinion of the Supreme Spirits after such an endorsement? The voice of Almas came from my right as my first teacher got to his feet. I suppose I am the only Supreme Spirit to cross paths with this walking wonder. I made my decision long ago when I handed him my staff. I see no point in repeating the words of Prontho and Cornick. This man is indeed worthy of our blessing. One after the other, the shamans stood up from their seats and confirmed my right to receive the shamanic blessing, about which, I am ashamed to admit, I know absolutely nothing. Maybe another bonus that will boost my stats? I have one from Iluna already, so now I'll have one from the shamans, too. Alongside this hat I just got, this seems to me a pretty sufficient reward for having Prontho appointed head shaman of Malabar.
"We have made our decision," Prontho spoke triumphantly as some whimsical tune began to sound beneath the hall's vaulted ceiling. Some of the shamans were rattling their tambourines, others clapped their palms against their knees, and my consciousness gradually sank beneath these piercing rhythms. Images began to rush past my eyes. My head began to spin as if I had inhaled too much smoke. I began to feel ill, but the steady rhythm of the beaten tambourines refused to release my mind to my senses. "You have received a minor shamanic blessing. Description: all stats increased by 10%. All my stats? So this was like Iluna's blessing, then? Elizabeth had increased them by 15%, whereas the Shaman Council only increased them by 10%? A bit weak, of course, but it will do. Glancing at my properties, I was about to close them when my eyes noticed something unusual. Looking more closely, I understood that Elizabeth's 15% bonus was child's play compared to this boost from the shamans. The minor shamanic blessing increased all of my stats, not just the base ones. The bonus extended to everything, including endurance, charisma, spirituality, and crafting. The 10% only came out to +1 to this vital character attribute, but that was just for the moment, while my crafting was still at a low level. If each piece from the Carmandant chess set would grant me a point to crafting, then in a year's time, when I'll have about 16 points, the blessing's bonus will be +2. The next question, then, is what does a full blessing entail? And how can I get it? "Fun time you guys are having here,"
jested Calatea, when we returned back to the training grounds. I glanced at the clock and saw that it was 10 till 9. If I don't book it to the Golden Horseshoe right this instant, I won't make the clan meeting, and Stacy will kill me. Then again, I'd love to talk to this Orcas, too.
True. Listen, I have to run right now. I have a meeting at 9, and I can't reschedule. Can we meet again tomorrow?
That won't be necessary. I've already learned everything I needed to. You see, I needed to make sure that a real shaman had become a dragon, and not just some player who sank a ton of money into the game, buying everything he wished. I don't want to get in your way, but I don't want to help you either. You must continue on your own. If you wish to enter the Order of the Dragons, our doors will always be open to you. I will ask Natalie to put together some information for you about our order. Look over it and make your decision. We can have a proper talk then. I'm not saying farewell, by the way, so much as until we meet again. I look forward to monitoring your progress from a distance. By the way, as far as I remember, no one has ever forced a change in the Council's leadership. I'm even afraid to ask where you dug up such a quest. Good luck to you, O High One.
Calatea embraced me and dissolved right in my arms. A very useful trick that I should hurry up and acquire for myself. But okay, it was time for the clan meeting. Chapter 3 The Riddle of the Castle.
You are expected. Please follow me.
The Golden Horseshoe guarded its reputation as the most exclusive establishment in Barleona very jealously. Even the servers here were staffed by players who had undergone a strict selection process. Upright, unblemished, and constantly smoothing some non-existent wrinkle, they were impossible to tell apart from NPCs, and they would disappear and appear just as suddenly as their digital counterparts. I can't say that I would enjoy spending 8 game hours a day serving other players, but these fellows seemed happy with their lot. The main thing was not to ask how much they were paid. This, so as not to torture oneself unnecessarily. Rumor had it that even the barbacks in the Golden Horseshoe earned well over 100,000 gold a month. Everything here was expensive and solemn.
"Here you are, sir."
The server threw back a curtain and ushered me into the niche within. Anastaria, Plinto, Barsina, Eric, Leidy, and Klutzer. The 6 new barons of Barleona, my entire modest clan, sat at the table and looked me up and down with curiosity. I must admit that in comparison to my previous leather outfit, which Rick had crafted for me, in this costume, I look quite different. Any patron visiting the Golden Horseshoe would be automatically dressed in attire that fit the status of this establishment. However, if the Emperor decides that a player is capable of looking better, and I would hope that for 300,000 gold he would, then the player may show off a bit before his friends, companions, intimates.
"It's like you've stepped out of a portrait, your earlship,"
Eric joked, turning back to the plate before him. Taking some green sludge, which reminded me of the gruel back in Pryke, the dwarf began to consume it with gusto. If I am not mistaken, this is his 2nd visit to the Horseshoe, so there's nothing strange about his appetite. The food in the restaurant was perfect. Unlike me, Anastaria had accepted the establishment's offer and, instead of the divine and snow-white gown she had worn at the palace, was now wearing an ordinary dress from the Golden Horseshoe. It was me who, having pressed no, looked like the odd man out. Where was my brain, anyway? "Well, you know how these things are," I uttered some platitude to be polite, and sat down in the only available seat at the head of the table. Realizing that everyone was focused on the food and that until they were done eating it, there could be no meaningful conversation, I called the server over.
"Are you ready to order?"
The server appeared beside me a few seconds later and looked at me inquiringly. Like a genie from the bottle, I swear. "I would like your finest herbal infusion and the rose de raton," I ordered, recalling what I had had the last time I was here. Practice had shown that trying new things in a tavern was a bit dangerous, so I decided not to risk it.
"Right away, sir,"
the server replied, and immediately vanished as if he had teleported away. Really, exactly like a genie.
"An earl eating a rose de raton," said Klutzer, unable to keep from remarking on my choice.
"It's a bit below your station, isn't it, your lordship? Or is it earlship? Well, whatever the moniker, come on and tell us how you got it. Waiting for you to show up, we've come up with 100 theories already. Stacy is the only one who's been sitting there silently, as if she knows something."
"I also want to know how you managed to do this," Barcina spoke up. "I was in a meeting with a possible recruit. I could see that he wasn't too interested in our low-level clan, and then suddenly, boom, that notification appeared. Baroness Barcina. Magdi, that was the recruit's name, hopped on board instantly. He even promised to find a few other players. At any rate, we shouldn't have any trouble with getting the raiders together. So you can add me to your audience, eager to hear this captivating tale of yours."
"Well, they sure did frame you quite nicely, what can I say?"
said Anastaria, as soon as I finished recounting my adventures. I had to tell my fighters everything, starting with the crafting of Tavia's tears and ending with my meeting with the Emperor, after which Anastaria was the first to speak. But what was she on about with this? I may as well have spoken this last thought out loud, because Anastaria immediately began to explain her statement.
"You've just been exiled from Annhurst for 3 months, by means of a gifted castle. He even gave you 2 extra weeks, like it's some present. All right, I can see from your expressions no one understands what I'm talking about. I'll start at the beginning. When a clan receives a castle, then either its head or whoever is designated as the castle's owner must spend 3 months in said castle. Only after this time period does the castle become the true home territory of the clan. Of course, you can leave the castle, but for no longer than a day. A player has 2 weeks to take care of all his business and head on over to his new domain. This is what happened with all 3 of Phoenix's castles. I doubt they'll change the rules for us. It follows that Mayan just said goodbye to all quests involving a journey somewhere for the next 3 months. For instance, the destruction of Guernica's dagger, you know, the one that's stuck in the Emperor's throne. There's just over 2 months left until the end of that quest. The dungeon where the relic is hidden has been found, and the phoenix, dragons, and heirs are all raiding it at the moment. But, okay, this is somewhat beside the point. Basically, Mayan now has to act as owner for the next 3 months, minus 2 weeks. It's too late to change this position,
And anyway, these functions can't be delegated.
Well, that's good news, I said sadly, realizing what lay in store for me over the next 3 months. Yet another 3-month-long imprisonment. How much more of this could I take? Then another happy thought occurred to me. And then, if we don't kill that monster, then my stay in the castle can turn out wasted? They'll take away both the castle and the title, and I'll have to sit around for another 3 months in Drangor?
This is why you need to assign an owner, a player who can stay in the castle and work on developing it.
Developing it?
Urusei is a level 1 castle. At least, all the castles that Phoenix received were that level. Like a player, a castle doesn't have a maximum level. However, it is exponentially harder to reach the next level as you level up. I could be mistaken, but I think they've just given us some ruins with, considering the bit about the monster, a dungeon. In order to reach level 2, the castle needs to be completely rebuilt until it resembles what it originally looked like. For that, you'll need masons, sculptors, artisans. It'll cost some money for sure. After that, to get to the 3rd level, the castle's territory must be expanded to twice its current area. The 4th level involves creating new buildings, upgrading existing ones, and so on and so forth. The upside is a place to store materials and items. The downside is the money you'll have to spend on it. And still a further downside is the possibility of players attacking the castle and looting its vaults. So generally, everyone does their best to level up their castles as quickly as possible.
What does anyone need vaults for anyway?
Leidy asked, surprised.
If you need to store something, you can just start a letter and then attach whatever items you need.
Sure, you can do that too, Anastaria agreed. But remember that a player can only store up to 60 items in their mail. So the most valuable things, yes, you save them that way. But if you need to hold on to a mountain of materials, then the mail won't do. The boys at the corporation aren't idiots. The mailbox is a form of personal storage for players who aren't in a clan. It's not much, but it more than does the job. For clans, however, only castles will do. For example, Phoenix owes us a ton of rare resources for the Dark Forest. If Eckler suddenly demanded that we take the resources he owes us this instant, where would we put them? It wouldn't all fit into the mailbox. We couldn't even take all of it. The only solution is a castle vault. Either your own or a rented one that belongs to some other clan. I have several contacts who can offer that kind of service. If you're interested, I can put you in touch.
Not at the moment, but thank you, I replied. Okay. I think I understand the whole castle business now, more or less. Now I just have to decide what to do about the monster.
You? What you have to do with it?
Plinto asked in surprise.
All you have to do is send me and Anastaria into the dungeon, wait a little more, and bam! No monster! It's not like there would be a level 400 boss in Narlak. At most, that monster's a level 250. I could take him with one arm tied behind my back. But, of course, a healer never hurts, especially one who can look the boss in the face and let him have a piece of her mind. As I see it, there is an entirely different problem.
Problem?
3 months in such a backwater away from Anhurs is just too much, and far. In 2 months, the Patriarch is training us for the 2nd time. Surely, man, you won't miss that. That's just a fact. It follows that we have to prepare ourselves for the training, since losing a month's worth of playtime isn't a good idea. That first training cost me too much as it is. So we will have to leave you early, for about a month, considering that we still have 2 weeks before we are teleported to our castle. I'll only be able to spend about 10 to 15 days with you, no more.
That's true, Anastaria concurred with the rogue. I can't spend the entire time with you either. I have business to take care of here, too.
So am I to understand that you guys are abandoning me? I asked, feeling a bit melancholy. There was logic to what Plinto was saying, and iron logic at that. However, I wasn't yet prepared to accept that I would be left without his support.
No one is abandoning anyone, replied Anastaria. We will kill the monster, but to spend 3 months in such a remote place. Mayan, you must understand that in the end this is a game, and volunteering myself for exile in such a low-level location is just not my cup of tea.
I also have an issue with this, Barcina butted into the conversation. I've started my druid training, and the quest requires me to visit a number of locales around Anhurs. I won't even be able to deal with the monster. That's just not possible for me right now. In a month and a half, I'll be all about it. Though, then the time will come for training with the Patriarch.
So, that's 3 out, I recapped bleakly, and looked over at my subdued officers. What do you say? Are you with me at least?
It's 4 out,
Leidy said unwillingly, barely pronouncing each word.
Mayan, if I'm honest, I have nothing to do there either. Running around raiding is just not my thing. I'll be able to do much more for the clan here in the thick of it. Our finances need to be constantly monitored, paid, reinvested. Items need to be bought as cheaply as possible and sold as expensively as possible. If we end up hiring workers, then I'll have to manage a whole new area. And for all that, I need time and more time. If I'm off raiding, I won't have time to get anything done. All in all, the clan finances need to be taken care of, and I am ready to dive right into that job. But I won't be treasurer. Only the clan head can answer for the treasury. I mean, you.
But the quest, I began, only for Leidy to cut me off.
I have lived 50 years without Barleona, and believe me, I will happily live just as many. Running around killing mobs is not me. Instead, I'll free up a pair of stats slots and get trade and eloquence. I'll focus on increasing the clan coffers. What I'm trying to say is that if you are okay with it, I will commit myself to caring for our business.
Leidy's words were so unexpected to me that I had to pause and collect my thoughts. The idea that a player would voluntarily give up the chance to level up and instead commit himself entirely to the financial part of the game simply didn't make sense to me. What about raids, quests, scenarios, loot? I looked at the other players with astonishment and realized that Barcina and Anastaria were entirely on Leidy's side in this. The two women understood perfectly well that in order for the clan to develop, we would need a person dedicated to its finances, and such a person would have to be trusted without any further caveats. All right. Unwillingly, I accepted the fact that Leidy would become the housekeeper. In that case, provisions are your department.
All the workers that I hope we hire must work like robots, and they must always have the resources they need. The gatherers, likewise, must always be occupied, otherwise we'll be paying them for nothing. Since we have switched topics to clan management, let's continue the conversation. Anastaria told me what you decided at last night's meeting. Has anything changed since then?
Then I will begin, Barcina instantly spoke up. I haven't managed to sort the mail you've forwarded to me, but I have found several interesting offers in it. As I already mentioned, I met with Magdi, a level 191 hunter. My feeling is that he could make a good raid leader, but we will have to see. Back before I joined up with you guys, when I was still a mercenary, I went through several dungeons with him. Out of anyone I have played with before, he is the most solid player. His leadership style reminds me of Anastaria's. Clear orders, never any panic or pedantry. He has one demand, however. He wants to be Baron. He is willing to prove himself as raid leader first. He promised to find some more fighters and go through whatever dungeon we choose as a test, so long as it matches the raid's level, of course. What else? I haven't managed to meet anyone besides Magdi, but I do have 10 meetings scheduled for tomorrow. By the way, you need to give me the ability to let players join our clan. At the moment, only you can do that. Otherwise, you'll have to find the time to send the people I accept an invitation personally, which, obviously, I have no problem with.
Okay, I've already done as you asked, I agreed, having adjusted the clan properties.
I have the personal site that I used to use to advertise my services when I was a mercenary. It's not getting any visitors at the moment, but there's no need to pay the hosting fees either. I've already bought it. I have an acquaintance who can design us a clan site. He won't work for free, though. Oh, completely forgot. On the topic of raids, the main question that everyone keeps asking me, and which I promised I'd answer today, is how we intend to divide up the loot and how much we will pay our raiders.
If I recall correctly, the unspoken custom invented by God knows whom, God knows when, is half of the gold dropped by a boss is divided among the raiders, I replied to the girl's question. Everything else, including the resources and the ammo, goes to the clan. But half the gold is like a sacred cow that no one can touch. I don't see any reason to change anything about that. There's just one thing. I'd like to see our people well-equipped, so before storing the loot in the vault, the raid leader will have to make sure that all his raiders get whatever they need for the future. We'll make an agreement that, if the players decide to leave the clan, then either they return the equipment or they buy it from us. The clan will pay for repairs. Let the players acquire their own elixirs and amplifications initially, unless we find a good alchemist or enchanter. For the moment, we haven't any. As for payment,
I can help with that, Plinto spoke up. Although I was a sham leader back in the Dark Forest, I did get a chance to see the salary ceilings tied to player level. I'm sending you the document now. There's no point in keeping this information to myself. That clan doesn't exist anymore anyway.
Maybe I should become a raider? I said pensively, upon seeing how much even Plinto, an ordinary fighter, could earn.
Sorry, but no way. Isn't your last name Total? No clan could afford you, Barcina joked, studying the list as I was. This is good. I've got what I need. Tomorrow I will send you a write-up of the results. I have another question for everyone. Does it make sense to let whoever into the clan, regardless of level, race, or preferred play style? I'm sure that we'll get many applicants looking for projections. We can take them and cut the chaff later.
I'm opposed to that, Anastaria spoke up immediately.
The more members in a clan, the harder it is to control. A single person can manage 10 or 12 players, no more. Having many members makes sense neither to the clan nor to the clan treasury. Just the opposite. Everyone will be asking for money to pay for repairs. A clan's level increases only when it completes quests or clears dungeons. The only restriction is that the raid party has at least 8 players from a single clan. And with all that said, the quests yield so little experience that I'm scared to even mention it. Since I have the floor, I'll also mention that I spoke with some workers, and they all refused to join our clan. We are too small and unknown. Our current rating is just 35,774, and that's mostly thanks to Plinto and me. The situation with the gatherers is the same. There are plenty of low-level gatherers who want to join up with us, but we don't need them. We'll have to pay them their salaries for at least 3-4 months and get nothing in return. The price for one pack of materials varies at the auction from one piece of silver to one piece of gold. A salary, meanwhile, is 20,000 to 30,000 a month. There's no benefit to be had, in other words. I do, however, have a proposal concerning the auction. We can find us our own auctioneer and make a deal with him, since it's too expensive to hire one of our own. The auctioneers take a 10% cut from each transaction, but, believe me, their services more than recoup the cost. I also propose we acquire a clan accountant imitator to help Leidy with reporting and payroll. If we start hiring people, we'll have to pay salaries, maintain a balance sheet, withhold taxes, and pay them to the relevant authorities. If we can automate this process, there's no reason not to. If we don't, we'd end up paying more in fines in the long run.
Agreed. I'll be waiting to hear from your contact to sign an agreement. Now, as I understand it, that's all on the agenda, so we can...
That's not all, Anastaria interrupted me. As I told you earlier, I want to resign from my position as clan deputy. I won't be able to handle it. I nominate 2 candidates to replace me, Klutzer and Barsina.
And I suppose no one is going to ask the nominees in question whether they even want to be nominated? Klutzer quipped, looking at the girl quizzically. I'll be a worse deputy than even you are, so I'd like to immediately rule out my candidacy. Not my thing, sorry.
Barsa?
Everyone looked over at our little druid.
I don't know.
The girl blushed under our attention.
I've never been a deputy clan head. I might mess something up. But you're not opposed to the idea?
Anastaria inquired.
No. I think I'd even find it interesting. At one point, I even wanted to start my own clan. I did a lot of research about how to make it profitable, but now that the opportunity is before me, I'm afraid.
Okay. One more time, Barsa. Do you agree to become the deputy? I asked again. Let everyone think I'm annoying, but I wouldn't want to force an unnecessary headache on a player, and a free player at that.
Okay, said the druid, sharply lifting her head as if she had decided on something. I am prepared to become the deputy, and I will do everything possible to justify my appointment.
It was a bit dramatic, what with the grand promise and all. But the main problem was solved, so I removed Anastaria from her position. Not 2 months had passed since she had been appointed, so she would not receive the Carmandant chess set quest. It's silly, of course, to worry, but I'd rather be sure. I will offer Barsa a very nice salary, draw up a good contract that will protect the clan in case she suddenly decides to quit, shout out to Elenium here, and in general, will do my best to mitigate any possible risks. Paranoia is paranoia, after all.
Another question, Anastaria went on. I received an interview request this morning. There's a clan that is not very well known that is making a series about Barleona, and they want to speak with us. What's our PR policy? If we're interested in promoting ourselves, then we shouldn't pass up this opportunity.
Schedule it for this week, I agreed. An interview won't kill us, and no publicity is bad publicity. Klutzer, Eric, have you made up your mind about the castle? Are you with me?
I won't let you have Klutzer, Stacy butted in again. I want to put him through an obstacle course while there's still time. As for Eric...
Also negative. Sorry. The dwarf finished me off. I want to get rid of marksmanship, one of my attributes, and try to get crafting going. You've told me so much about craftsmanship that I'm simply itching to give it a shot myself. But to do that, I need to gain an audience with the Emperor and then study under a teacher.
You don't need a teacher for that business, I muttered grimly.
It's you who doesn't need one. I do. Look, we only have 2 months before our training with the Patriarch, after which we'll have lost another month. If I can't get anything done in these 2 months, then I won't ever become a craftsman. I need time to wrap my head around it.
Okay, let me do a recap here. Anastaria and Klutzer are pursuing their individual goals. Plinto is getting ready for training with the Patriarch. Barcina is leveling up her druid. Leidy is becoming our financial guru. And Eric will summon his muse and submit himself to her whims and caprices. Did I get all that right?
All will be in charge of the raiders, Plinto added after a moment's thought. I'll wind them up to ensure that they hit the ground running. It won't be hard, and my being in Anhurs anyway will only help.
I will focus on the workers and gatherers, Anastaria said. I'm sure I can scrounge up about 100 in the next month. Simply make sure to give me permission to accept new clan members.
Me too, said the rogue. I have a couple of acquaintances that I want to talk to.
This is all fine and good, but have you all forgotten that we still have the prince's quest to deal with?
Well, we have these 2 weeks to do it in. We'll spend a week on recruiting, then Leidy will teleport us on location, and we'll get to work.
In that case, I have nothing to add but bon appetit. Let's meet here again in 4 days. I'm sending the invite now. Thank you all. Digging into my rose de raton, I couldn't shake the feeling that everyone had just abandoned me. To leave me alone for 3 or even 2 months in a castle that, according to Anastaria, is not much more than some ruins, it was as though fairness had quit this world.
Good morning, sleepyhead.
Anastaria's happy voice sounded in my amulet. It was only 7 in the morning, according to the system time, so I wasn't too happy, to put it mildly, to receive such an early call from the girl.
Did you hit your head, Stacy?
I grumbled without enthusiasm or welcome.
What's so urgent that you couldn't wait until lunch?
I could wait until lunch, Anastaria replied, her joy undaunted. But Ekeler is prepared to take you to the Thracinians only right this moment. The choice is yours.
To the Thracinians?
Don't you want to complete your outfit? However, if you are tired and want to sleep some more, I will let Ekeler know. Mayen is busy sleeping. He has important dreams to attend to.
Where are you? My drowsiness evaporated immediately, replaced by a further question that I didn't hesitate to ask. And how much will this service cost me?
We are at the Thracinian place. I don't imagine I need to give you directions. As for money, Eckler is offering you the opportunity to purchase the items. The rest is up to you. Make your decision.
I'm on my way. Give me 5 minutes. On the one hand, every beginning player dreams of a scaling item. On the other hand, it's an utterly useless thing. A scaling item increases its attributes from level to level, allowing the player to forget any worries about clothes or armor. That is, to forget such worries up until level 250 or so, when the items you find in dungeons are good enough that you can drop the scaling item and really start to specialize. And yet, level 250 was still a ways away for me, so I didn't have much choice. A breastplate, a pauldron, and a cloak. Given the buff to my stats, I did not regret the money I spent in the least. All that remained was to put my recently promoted profession to work and craft some rings. Then I could go take on whoever crossed my path. At the moment, I resembled one of the rich kids who had dumped colossal funds into the game. It's all beautiful and cool, of course, but unfortunately, utterly pointless in the long run. Let it be, though. The important thing was that Thracinian items could not break and didn't require repairs, which for high-level items were frequently more expensive than buying the items new again. So there's a quandary for you. Pay a one-time fee for your gear and forget about it, or change it every 5 to 8 levels and constantly ponder how best to repair it or find a better version. What else can one do to forget about such outlays? 1.5 million gold went to the distant long run.
"Hey, Stacy, how did you get your reputation with the Thracinians anyway?" I asked as soon as Eckler left us alone together. If someone were to ask me what occasion prompted the head of Malabar's top clan to personally assist me in my shopping, I would have a lot of trouble answering. The only reason I could see was that he already knew that it was impossible to give me the Emperor's scroll on the Carmandant chess set, so he was doing everything possible to ensure that I took some other reward. After all, we had made a deal, and that deal needed to be honored.
"You know, as many times as I've been here, I still don't see the Thracinians in my list of encountered factions. Is this like a Phoenix secret sealed by 7 seals or something like that?"
"Of course not," the girl smiled. "There's no secret here. The clans simply consider it bad form to talk about it too much. The Thracinians belong to the Danrai race. They aren't like anyone in Barleona, and they live only in Malabar. The Anhur's library has a book that details their history. You have to read it and then go to the Thracinians with the offer of collecting the shards of their world. Here's a link. The Danrai only start talking about this topic once you've read the book. As for the shards, they are scattered about the dungeons, and the only way to get them is by raiding. And this, by the way, is where the secrecy around the clan's reputation with the Thracinians is born. But, again, the chief condition is that he who learns about it must read the book. When it comes to the Thracinians, I, too, have a big fat 0 in my list of encountered factions. Eckler made sure to transfer that to himself. But were I to approach the Danrai, they would allow me to start everything all over again. Make sure to read the book. It'll come in handy. The Thracinians have been added to your list of encountered factions."
I didn't put off Anastaria's advice and headed to the library straight away. The book she recommended was located in the most remote and seldom visited section of the place. When I requested he bring me the book in question, the librarian simply waved in some remote direction, sending me to look for it on my own. At around 100 pages, it was not too hefty of a tome. It told of the explosion that destroyed the home world of the blue-skinned Danrai. Traveling on a single spaceship, they reached Barleona. As they were landing, however, an explosion shook the vessel, scattering every Thracinian item all over the continent in the form of shards. The current site of that failed landing is beneath the giant Lake of Sorrow, which some consider our continent's inland sea. The Thracinians themselves had been in special capsules and survived, yet the remnants of their homeworld were lost. Essentially, the gist of leveling one's reputation in this quest involves collecting these shards and helping the Danrai restore a portion of their former history. What a bunch, these developers. If you don't know that such a book exists, you'll never even think of looking for it. But even if you do find it and start reading it, it's written so tediously that you could form the impression that a very talented writer was doing his best to make the story as dull as possible. And only once you have read the book cover to cover does the Thracinian faction appear in your list of factions. A cunning trick. Mister, you don't have a book about Castle Urusai, perchance, do you? I asked the gnome librarian as soon as I'd finished reading the book about the Thracinians. Anastaria had told me that there is no mention whatsoever of a castle called Urusai, as if the developers had created it from scratch for my clan. But considering the presence of the monster, I had trouble believing such generosity.
Urusai? The librarian asked with surprise. That's the second time I hear this name mentioned today, and I assure you that I have never heard of it before.
The second time?
One of your clan members, the great Anastaria, stopped by early this morning and riffled through all the entries about castles. I had to help her familiarize herself with all the multitude properties and domains of our world, and I can, with confidence, assert that Castle Urusai simply does not exist.
Okay, I said, surprised with Stacy's perseverance. Considering that she woke me up at 7 in the morning, when did she manage to stop by the library? Is there a list of castles located in the vicinity of Narlak?
That is a question I can answer. There are altogether 4 castles around Narlak, one of which is almost entirely destroyed. None of them, however, are named anything remotely like Urusai. Anastaria asked the same question, and we ended up carefully examining all the nearby lands.
Tell me, can castles be renamed? I cast the final line I had at the moment. If Stacy had been here and, as the librarian claimed, failed to find anything, what could a simple shaman like me achieve?
It happens, but extremely rarely, came the surprising response. In the entire history of Malabar, this has happened maybe 20 times. We considered this possibility as well. Not one of the castles that were renamed were ever called Urusai.
Just great. So my castle is like some anti-mirage. No one can see it, yet it exists. The idea that the Emperor had granted me a non-existent property? Wait. Okay, tell me, please, is there a Castle Drangor?
It seems to me that you and Anastaria are very similar people, smiled the librarian. She asked the same question as she was about to leave, and we were forced to begin our research all over again. Yes, such a castle does exist. It is located near Sintana, the dwarven capital. It is a level 1 castle that currently belongs to the Empire.
However, a resolution has been passed to transfer it to the free people.
As I understand it, you may become its future owner?
That is correct. But I am above all interested in Urusei. Let's assume that the castle has been renamed. How many level one castles contain monsters?
There are none like that in Malabar, the NPC replied with a sincere smile. But trust me, we examined this possibility as well, and thoroughly. You would be advised to speak with your clan members first, before tearing me away from vital business.
A miss, another miss, and a third. Why did I even doubt Stacy to begin with? The likelihood that she had already turned the librarian inside out was almost 100%, and yet here I am wasting my time with futile inquiries as if I'm some master sleuth. And there is no Castle Urusei in Cardus either, because maybe... I began, and trailed off upon encountering the unhappy look on the librarian's face, now radiating clear displeasure.
"Young sir," the librarian said, adjusting his glasses, "I have extremely little time for indulging your find-a-castle game. I reiterate, there is no Castle Urusei in Malabar. Now, if you please excuse me, I have business to attend to. If further questions regarding this property occur to you, feel free to ask your fellow clan member. She knows much more about it than I do. Until we meet again."
The librarian jumped up from his desk, grabbed an armful of books, and headed off into the depths of the library with an assured stride. An assistant instantly appeared and took over his position, a player who had decided to study one of the game world's languages, a player wishing to learn and practice anything other than the common tongue must spend a month working in the library, where he does things like replace the NPC at the research desk, return books to their shelves, and retrieve them for visitors. Considering the number of NPCs, as well as players who visited the library every day, there was plenty of work to do. Now was no different. Casually flipping open the visitor's register, the player looked at me inquisitively in expectation of some requested tome. A level 75 mage from the Lions of Normandy clan. Shaking my head negatively to indicate that I didn't need anything, I headed for the exit. I had not managed to learn anything about Urusei at the library. That's okay. I know another place that I could try.
"How may I help you?"
Hardly had I entered the palace when the NPC steward, decked out in a festive and colorful outfit, materialized beside me, making sure, just in case, that I have access to the Emperor's office, even if no one would let me in there, since the doors would be locked, I bowed respectfully and said, "I would like to speak with the Princess in order to express my gratitude for her assistance."
"Do you have a scheduled appointment?"
"No, but..." I was taken aback that meeting with Tisha required the same procedure as meeting the Emperor himself. Had the drop in my attractiveness with her played such a decisive role? A pity.
"In that case, I am afraid I cannot help you. The Princess is occupied at the moment. Given your current reputation with her, the next possible appointment may be scheduled at 4 in the evening, 9 days from now. Do you wish to schedule this appointment?"
"Will you please simply tell her that Mayan wishes to see her?" I tried again, trying to conceal my emotions. "I am certain that she will be happy to hear I've stopped by."
"Understood. No appointment will be scheduled. I am sorry. I cannot help you in the matter. The princess is occupied. Do you wish to see the garden?
The steward asked, just in case, perfectly understanding the level of access I had to the palace grounds. Having 54% access to the open areas, I could at my leisure stroll and loiter wherever I felt like. The important thing was that these areas were open, and I wouldn't have to pass through the prohibited areas to get to them. For example, one of the first areas that players gained access to was the throne room, located deep inside the palace. In order to reach it, you would have to go through the audience hall, the administrative room, the waiting hall, and several other mysterious rooms that you gained access to only towards the very end. Players were free to wander around the palace garden and enjoy its beauty, and they could visit the Imperial Museum, which exhibited wonders from all over Malabar, but only a select few of them could stroll around the palace like their own home. I think I'll take a walk. I took up the steward's invitation, clutching it like the only straw I had. It was very rare, but certainly possible, for the palace residents to take strolls around the garden. You could meet heralds, advisers, and even the emperor himself there. The latter did not hesitate to enjoy his own garden, and would frequently speak to players he encountered. I'm sure that Tisha, too, liked that corner of the palace, considering she had been raised in a village. Who knows? Maybe I'd luck out.
"Earl," said a senior NPC, and it took me a moment to realize that I was the one